This is Larry Jones. You are listening to the Grace and Glory Hour with Pastor David M. Atkinson. Thank you for joining us today. We appreciate your interest and request that you pray for this ministry. Our email address is graceglory7@juno.com. graceglory7@juno.com. Now here is Pastor Atkinson.
From James chapter 1 and verse 17 and Numbers 10 verse 29 came these thoughts. I do not like to chasten you with a rod of thorny wood, but I am the God who loves you, and I would do you good. I do not like to hear you cry when sorrow brings you pain, but I know pain will soften, and I would bring you gain. I do not like to turn my back when sin has tripped your walk, but I am the God of holiness. Confess, and then we'll talk. I do not like to see you fall when self has played the fool, but I am the God of glory. Your motives, vain and cruel. So sometimes I must chasten, and sometimes I say no. For I am the God who loves you, and I would with you go. But I cannot walk with sin or rebellion's hateful glance. I cannot talk with self-willed strays who dance the devil's dance. I cannot share my glory with one who talent flaunts. I cannot bless the praiseless one who only comes with wants. Because I'm God and cannot God deny. I love too much to wink, condone. The things I send into your life, I send to bring you home. If you will bow before my plan, submit as children should, your life will bloom with joy's desires, for I would do you good. James 1:17 and Numbers 10:29. We're looking together at Acts chapter 27, the slow sailing syndrome. Someone asked me today, is this phrase, is this concept yours? Well, as far as I know, it is. But you know, not have I gotten but what I received. But as far as I know, the alliteration and the word picture is my own. And I work rather intensely to prepare hooks, visual hooks, word pictures that we can hang doctrinal truth on. And I feel that to some small degree, through the Word and by the power of the Holy Spirit, I have succeeded. If 3 years from now you see me and you don't even remember my name, but you say, oh, you're the slow sailing syndrome fella. You see, to a small measure, I have succeeded. If you see me at Gurney Mills trying to find a white shirt at a price that pleases a Baptist preacher, if you walk up to me and say, I can't remember your name, but you're the slow sailing syndrome fella, then I am happy and I can sleep at night knowing that I gave you a hook upon which to hang truth in what I hope will be a memorable way. Acts 27, as I preach it, is a record of the slow sailing syndrome. We look first of all in the beginning sessions at the characteristics or the symptoms that tell us we're in a slow sailing syndrome. And then more recently, we've been looking at what we can learn from Paul as to how we should respond when we find ourselves in a slow sailing syndrome. Of course, this voyage to Rome should have taken 3 months. It took 7. Paul was on this ship because he had appealed to Caesar, and he had appealed to Caesar to avoid the assassination plot that Ananias and the Sanhedrin had planned against him in requesting the Roman government that Paul be moved from Caesarea up to Jerusalem for trial in Jerusalem. But Paul had gotten wind that the Sanhedrin planned that he would never make it to Jerusalem for trial, but he would be assassinated on the way. Having learned of that plot, he said, "I appeal to Caesar," and it was his right as a Roman citizen. So now he finds himself on this boat in this slow sailing syndrome. Let's just review the responses we see from Paul in this situation that can teach us perhaps something of how we should respond when we find ourselves in a very slow time in our lives and our ministries. We have said that there in Acts 27:23, where Paul says, "There stood by me the angel of God, whose I am." We said this morning that we should look to a supernatural God. We should look to a supernatural God. We should be sure that we're His. And then we should take comfort in reaffirming His ownership of us. God, whose I am and whom I serve. Remembering the ownership of God in our lives will help us in the times when life and ministry seem so slow. Look to a supernatural God. Be sure that you belong to Him. And reaffirm His ownership of your life. Then in Acts 27, verse 24a, we saw that we should remember that even those bad things that happen to us are permitted under the sovereignty of God. Even those negative things, the things that we would not want in the natural, are permitted under the sovereignty of God. We are inclined to say, well, sunshine is permitted by God, but the rain is also permitted by God. Fast trips on the sea are permitted by God, so are the slow trips. And we must remind ourselves that God is sovereign over it all. He's in control of it all, whether the voyage is fast or slow. We need to take some comfort in the fact that God's in control even when we're going through negative times. And then in verse 24b, where we read, "Lo, God hath given thee all them that sail with thee," we saw number 10, that we should respond to the slow sailing syndrome by remembering that one of the reasons God allows us to go through the slow sailing syndrome is so that we can minister to the other 275 people who are on the ship with us. We're not alone. We should not live life as islands. And God allows us to go through these things so that we can minister to members of our family and fellow members of our church or a ministry like Camp Joy. God lets us sail slowly so we can reach out to others who also are sailing slowly. And then we saw in verse 25a, "Wherefore, sirs, be of good cheer, We saw that the 11th principle for responding when we find ourselves in the slow sailing syndrome is a repetition of the 7th. And that is to be of good cheer. And we saw that good cheer is mentioned 3 times in this chapter. And when something appears 3 times in the Bible, it's there for emphasis. We need to be of good cheer when we're in times of slow living and slow ministry. We're to consciously and deliberately practice joy. It's not hypocritical. It's not artificial. It's not phony. It's obedience. Rejoice in the Lord always. And again I say to rejoice, even when you're in the midst of the slow sailing syndrome. And then we saw in verse 25b, "For I believe God." The words of Paul, and he said, "But it shall be even as it was told me." We need to believe God. Even when there's no reason or evidence other than what His Word has taught us, we need to believe God. Even when there's no reason or evidence other than the fact that His Word told us. Now, let's read further this evening and then get back into additional things that we can learn from Paul in this situation as to how to respond when we're going through times of slow sailing. Verse 32. "Then the soldiers cut off the ropes of the boat," or the dinghy. The boat or the dinghy was used to carry the anchor across over a sandbar in the anchoring of the ship. "The soldiers cut off the ropes of the boat or the dinghy and let her fall off." Now, there was a reason why the soldiers did that, and we're going to find out what that was in a few moments. "And while the day was coming on, Paul besought them all to take meat or food, saying, 'This day is the 14th day that ye have tarried and continued fasting, having taken nothing. Wherefore, I pray you to take some meat, for this is for your health. For there shall not an hair fall from the head of any of you.' And when he had thus spoken, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all. And when he had broken it, he began to eat. Then were they all of good cheer, and they also took some meat or some food. And we were in all in the ship 260 souls," 276. "And when they had eaten enough," now I cannot tell you why Dr. Luke moves back and forth between first person and third person. You see the change once again there between verse 37 and 38. In 37, it's "we." Dr. Luke says he's in the company. Well, please understand, he didn't jump overboard between verses 37 and 38. Luke is still there, but for some reason, he goes back to third person, "they," but he's still there. He's there in 37, and he's there in 38, and I expect Dr. Luke ate with the other 275. They were all hungry. I don't know why he keeps shifting back and forth between first person, plural, "we," and third person, "they," but he does. But obviously, so he's on board the whole time. There's nowhere he can go. Agreed? He's there. But he keeps going back and forth between first person and third person. "And when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship and cast out the wheat into the sea. And when it was day, they knew not the land, but they discovered a certain creek with a shore, into the which they were minded, if it were possible, to thrust in the ship. And when they had taken up the anchors," perhaps part of the thinking is that he's not a part of the crew. He's, in some sense, an objective observer, so perhaps he steps back from time to time as an objective observer and talks about the crew, they or them. When they had taken up the anchors, they committed themselves unto the sea and loosed the rudder bands and hoist up the mainsail to the wind and made toward shore. And falling into a place where two seas met, they ran the ship aground, and the forepart stuck fast and remained unmovable. But the hinder part was broken with the violence of the waves. And the soldiers' counsel was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim out and escape. We remember that Roman soldiers kept their prisoners on penalty of death if they ever escaped. And so the counsel was, let's kill them before they can escape, so at least we can't be charged with negligence in letting them escape. But the centurion, willing to save Paul, all through this chapter, the centurion is friendly to Paul, but especially after that one time when the centurion accepted the advice of the majority, and that proved to be bad advice. The centurion became even closer to Paul after it turned out that Paul's advice was the best and the majority were wrong about setting sail. So that by this time, the centurion has a very warm heart toward Paul. The centurion, willing to save Paul, kept them from their purpose and commanded that they which could swim should cast themselves first into the sea and get to land. And the rest, those who could not swim, some on boards and some on broken pieces of the ship. And so it came to pass that they escaped all safe to land, even as the angel of the Lord had promised Paul it would be. Let's continue now to look at responses when we find ourselves in the slow sailing syndrome. And some of these responses will be expressed negatively. That is something we should not do when we find ourselves in a time of slow sailing. And we're coming right now to something we should not do when we're in a time of slowness in our life or ministry. Verse 30, and as the shipmen were the crew, those responsible for handling the ship, and as the shipmen were about to flee out of the ship, you see their motive there, you see their ulterior motive. When they had let down the boat, the dinghy, into the sea, under color as though they would have cast anchors out of the foreship, they were performing a deceptive act. This phrase, under color as though, means under pretense of. And they wanted to abandon ship, but they knew that only so many could fit in the boat or the dinghy. And so they concocted this scheme. They were going to pretend that they needed to get into the boat, the dinghy, and cast anchors out of the foreship, which is the bow. So this was an act of deception. It was pretense. And that tells us the 13th thing about how to respond to times of slow sailing. And it's this. It's a negative. It's a what not to do. Number 13, there is never a voyage so slow or so stormy as to justify tactics of deception and dishonesty. And Paul saw right through it. They were pretending they needed the boat to cast anchors out of the bow. Paul knew enough about being on the sea, he was used to being on the sea, but he saw right through it. And these sailors thought their chances of survival were better if they could surreptitiously abandon ship. But Paul, who has a wonderful balance in this chapter, a wonderful balance between trusting God and being very practical, Paul saw that, humanly speaking, they needed a crew if they were to have any earthly hope. You know, he wasn't so spiritual that he was no earthly good. Or in this case, he wasn't so spiritual that he was no Mediterranean good. He still had his practical sense about him. He said, if the shipmen, if the crew abandon and leave us, then we have no one to operate this ship. A good, honest purpose need not be disguised. And this would be a surreptitious action. It was deceptive. They intended to abandon and leave the rest there to fend for themselves without a crew. Brothers and sisters, slow progress and reversals are never acceptable excuses for dishonest or deceptive tactics. Paul put an end to it as soon as he saw it. Have you ever been tempted to just fudge a little when the sailing was slow? Have you ever been tempted just to cut corners a little bit in how you report the situation when life is slow and ministry is slow? Well, Paul would not allow deception or dishonesty. Regarding this incident, John Phillips, now with the Lord, wrote, "Such is the natural cowardice and selfishness of the human heart as it is revealed by these crew members. Times of great peril often bring out the best in men when they rise to great heights of heroism and sacrifice. But times of peril can also bring out the very worst in men. And such was the case here." How is it with me? And how is it with you? Will a time of slow sailing, or danger, or peril bring out the best in you and me? Or will a time of slow sailing and peril bring out the worst in me? How do I respond or react under pressure? How do I respond or react in a storm? Does it drive me to deception? Or do I remain transparent and honest? We did have a potential staff member with us on the weekend, and he said, "You know one thing I like about this ministry?" He said, "You've been just so transparent. You've been just so transparent about the realities that would be for us if Heather and I came here to minister." He said, "You know, I come from a very transparent church." And he said, "That's what I want." And I get here and I find out that you've been just so candid about both the good things at Dyer Baptist Church and the challenges at Dyer Baptist Church. Storms and peril can bring out the best in us or the deceptive worse in us. John Phillips continues, "The crew, the sailors, the ones operating the ship, decided to try to save their own lives at all costs. They pretended that they had to make the ship more secure by laying out the anchors from the bow. To do that, they said, they would need the ship's launch, the little boat, or the dinghy." Such a move, the usage of the dinghy, would have added nothing whatever to the safety of the ship. The officers of the ship could not have been deceived by the ploy, so they must also have been parties to this scheme of deception. But there was one man on board who immediately saw through it, Paul. He had been to sea too many times and had taken far too keen an interest in sailors and their trade to be deceived by this excuse of the sailors thus to abandon ship. Paul saw through it at once and spoke up. Paul, faced with the defection of the ship's officers and men, did not shrug his shoulders and look for some divine miracle to intervene. He saw at once the obvious fact that without a crew, the ship would never make it to shore. And though God had promised that all the men would be safe, that did not mean that Paul should not do what he could do to help in the situation. We have our human responsibility along with the sovereign control of God, true. We have our human responsibility to do what we know, to do the best we can. And so Paul followed through with his human responsibility and with down-to-earth wisdom, according to John Phillips, appealed to the one man on board who was able to stop the scheme, and that was the centurion. Paul put the matter bluntly to the centurion and the soldiers. If the crew goes, then we'll all be lost. And that moves us on to the next response that we should make in times of slow sailing. Look at verses 31 and 32 again. Paul said to the centurion and to the soldiers, except these, the crew, abide in the ship, you cannot be saved. Well, Paul said to the centurion, would you like to live a little bit longer? Then you better deal with this. And soldiers, if you want to live a little bit longer, you better recognize that we need to keep the crew here. Cut the ropes! Get rid of the dinghy so it will no longer be a distraction and a temptation for anyone. Cut the ropes! And verse 32 says that the soldiers obeyed Paul and cut the ropes, and the dinghy went crashing into the sea, and it was soon gone in the waves. This is the 14th response. Be willing to sacrifice secondary, encumbering preoccupations for the sake of the primary cause. Be willing to sacrifice secondary, encumbering preoccupations for the sake of the primary cause. The dinghy, by this point, had become a distraction, a secondary temptation. Paul said, get rid of it. Cut it loose. I believe that each one of us is tempted during a time of slow sailing to become preoccupied with the secondary and the peripheral. We need to cut through it all. We need to ask God to give us discernment and insight to cut off the secondary and stay with the primary. To have anything that could be a distraction cut off and cut away so we can stick with the main cause. I believe it's one of the enemy's tactics to get us off course with a fixation on the secondary and a preoccupation with things that are not really the issue or the matter at hand. Get rid of the dinghy. It's become a problem. Cut it loose. Our only hope is to be unencumbered. Get rid of the distraction. So at a nod from the centurion, the soldiers pushed the crew. These sailors who'd been caught with their hands in the cookie jar. The soldiers, at the command of their centurion, pushed the crew, the sailors, aside, and with their swords cut the dinghy loose. Notice also verse 38, B and C. This is after the meal is taken, but I'm going to just move ahead to see something similar. At least it can speak to us in a similar word picture. The end of 38, they lightened the ship and cast out the wheat into the sea. They would not need the wheat. They wouldn't need any more food if they didn't live. And the primary goal was for them to stay alive. We need to learn to lighten the ship and cast out wheat that's going to be secondary if we don't stay alive, in order to focus on the main journey and the major cause. Let's move on. Verse 34. In verse 34, Paul told the others on board, "I pray you to take some meat, some food, for this is for your health." Number 15. In facing a time of slow sailing, do not let the mental or emotional storm entrap you into ignoring your physical health. Paul said, eat. This is for your health. Now, it may shock you that I saw this in this passage. I'm not known as a healthy individual. No one has ever accused me of keeping the health food stores in business. The most healthy thing I take is black cherry juice every morning. And I frown and wrinkle up my nose and drink the black cherry juice because it helps my arthritis. And it does. I recommend it if you have arthritis. But that's about as healthy as I ever get. So doesn't it surprise you that I see this business of physical health in this passage? Paul said, now look, he said, we're mentally and emotionally distraught. But while we're mentally and emotionally distraught, let's not neglect the body. God has promised us that we're all going to live. So take some food for your health. I remember in our first pastorate, I was barely 21 when the president of our small Bible college, who thought I was older, he thought I was in at least my third year of the Bachelor of Theology course, and he extended the invitation from the denomination that controlled the Bible college that I should plant a church about 20 miles away from the Bible college. He said later, I had no idea you were that young, but I was young. And my first time out, we started with 18 people in a public school, and things went pretty well for about a year and a half. And I was in a group. It was a holiness denomination. And ladies, pray for grace. All right, pray for grace to keep loving me and the Lord. Would you do that? We were in a denomination that allowed women to be on what was called the church board. And I'm no chauvinist, but I don't believe in women pastors. I don't believe in women deacons. My ministry would be lost without the precious ministry of women, but I just don't believe the Bible teaches women pastors or women deacons. But our group allowed women, especially if you were desperate enough. That was supposed to be a little bit funny. And I remember when she turned on me. Big, tall woman. She'd been in the military. And she tried to military me. Now, I'm sure she was taller than I am. That wouldn't have to be too tall, but she tried to military me. And she called the district superintendent, the bishop. We were moved around by the district superintendent, who acted something like a bishop. And when things got politically hot in one church, he moved the pastors around. And he felt it was his job just to keep all the pulpits filled. He told me that one time. I know that was how he saw his major job description. I complained about tongues coming into the nomination. And I said, there are five pastors promoting tongues, ecstatic speech. And he said, but David, what can I do? I've got to keep all the churches with a pastor. I've got to keep all the pulpits filled. And what will people say if we deal with these men who are advocating tongues? Well, I thought it'd be better to have some pulpits empty than have some men promulgating tongues. But Esther, nice Bible name, but she could be nasty. Esther called the district superintendent and she said, I don't like him anymore. I don't like him. And so the district superintendent phoned me and he said, I'm going to have a meeting with your board. And I thought you might like to be there. Well, I thought I might like to be there too, since I was the pastor. So I thought, I think I'll come. And I had my resignation in my pocket. And I told the DS before I went to the meeting, I said, I've got my resignation right here. He says, oh, David, don't be too hasty. Don't be too... See, he wanted to keep the pulpit filled, right? Don't be too hasty. We'll patch this up. We'll get this work through. For a month, I subsisted on French onion soup. That's all I could keep down. My first time out, French onion soup. Jane would say, what do you want tonight? I said, French onion soup. For a month. But we need to take care of the body when we're in a time of slow sailing. We'll not feel like it. We won't feel like it mentally or emotionally. But this is our tabernacle. It's the dwelling place of the Holy Spirit if we're saved. And so Paul said, eat. Eat for your health. And so, with my wife's encouragement, I ate French onion soup. It takes a measure of self-discipline when the spirit and the mind are roiling and churning. And when your heart is broken, it takes a measure of self-discipline to eat. But we should eat during times of slow sailing. The spirit and the mind and the emotions will be impacted if the body suffers. So this is a very practical point. You say, boy, you've not been very spiritual for the last 5 minutes. No, this is spiritual because our spirit dwells in a body. Try to keep nourishing the body when you're in a time of pressure or slow sailing. Now, let's go on. Verse 33. While the day was coming on, Paul besought them all to take meat. Verse 34. Take some meat. This is for your health. Verse 35. And when he had thus spoken, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all. Response number 16, and this is a positive one. I like this one. When you find yourself in a storm and in the slow sailing syndrome between the hours of midnight and dawn, and they give us the time frame here, this was between midnight and dawn, when you find yourself in a slow sailing syndrome between midnight and dawn, it's a good thing to find something to be thankful for. It's a good thing to find something to be thankful for. In everything give thanks, for this is the will of God concerning you. And observe that Paul returned thanks for the bread in the presence of them all. What an evangelistic service. Right? What a worship service. The born-again Hebrew has a prayer meeting of thanks in front of them all. What a testimony this would have been. And again, John Phillips writes about the particular significance or the unique significance Paul's prayer of, we call it grace or returning thanks, would have had to each of the subgroups on board. John Phillips says, the sailors, angry, shamed because they got caught trying to take off in the dinghy. The sailors, angry, shamed, afraid, worn out, and knowing better than anyone else the perils ahead, were brought by Paul through this simple, instinctive act of returning thanks for a piece of bread. They were brought in the presence of the living God. Now, they'd just been rebuked because they got caught trying to abandon ship in the dinghy. And Paul says, let's pray. There are these sailors, these crooked crewmen, these deceptive crewmen who wanted to surreptitiously abandon. Paul says, now we'll pray if you don't mind. I love it. Don't you? We'll pray if you don't mind. And suddenly the rum, 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 rum is quiet. And the little Jewish missionary prays. And the soldiers who are angry at the sailors, right? The soldiers, another subgroup on board, the soldiers who are angry at the sailors are also led into the presence of the living God by the little Hebrew missionary who returns thanks before taking bread. And the passengers, worn out with sickness and terror, listening in horror to the booming of the breakers on the crags along the coast, were hushed and comforted in a stormy time of slow sailing because the little Jewish missionary said, let's give thanks. And finally, the prisoners, perhaps with both hands and feet in iron. When's the last time you tried to swim with your hands and feet in iron? Those prisoners, with their hands and feet in iron, are led into the presence of God during a time of storm and slow sailing by this little Jewish missionary whose speech was contemptible and whose bodily presence was weak, but he gave thanks during the time of slow sailing. I should too. And so should you. And then note verse 35d. 35d. And when Paul had broken the bread, he began to eat. In 36a, the atmosphere was cheered instantly by the prayer of thanks. And then, after the prayer of thanks, after the cheering of the atmosphere, in the second part of verse 36, it says, they also, and I take that word all, in the first part of verse 36, to also apply to the second part of 36. Then were they all of good cheer, and they also, and I think it's parallelism, I believe it's, they also all took some meat. Response number 17. When you find yourself in the slow sailing syndrome, continue to set an example for others. The others saw Paul's example. They followed it. They ate too. When I'm in a time of slow sailing, I'm tempted to say, I don't feel like being an example today. Why do I always have to be an example? I'm tired. Paul continued to serve as an example, a great influence. He ate, and then all the rest of them, under his influence, followed his example, and they ate too. Let's maintain our testimony and our example when we're in a time of slow sailing. You may be exhausted, but take your time alone with the Lord. Remember, there was a time in this journey when Paul went away from the rest. It says he was in long abstinence. He seemed to have been away from the larger group for a while. Take your time with the Lord and continue to be an example. When it's hardest, continue to be an example to others. They're watching us. He ate, they ate. Use your influence for God's glory. And then, as we're moving toward the close, I'll speak on a totally different subject in the morning. We're going to finish this evening. Verse 40. And when they had taken up anchors, they had a plan. When they'd taken up anchors, they committed themselves unto the sea. This is the 18th response during a time of slow sailing. Trust yourself. Commit yourself to the very thing you feared, Satan and sin being the only exceptions. Obviously, I'm accepting Satan and sin. We should never commit ourselves to Satan and sin. They had feared the sea, and with good reason. But they committed themselves unto the very sea that they had feared. And Paul was among the ones who committed themselves to the very sea they had feared and the very sea they found menacing. Now, we almost expect Paul to say what he says in 2 Timothy 1:12. We almost expect Paul to say what he says in 2 Timothy 1:12. I'm persuaded that he's able to keep that which I've committed unto him against that day. I almost expect that from Paul. He's a missionary church planter. He's a teacher of pastors. And I almost expect him to say, I'm persuaded that he's able to keep that which I've committed unto him against that day. But here it says that they committed themselves to the sea. The sea is what we fear. Remember the fellow in the Bible who's afraid of a lion or a bear, and he's trying to run away from the lion or a bear, and he runs into a house. Apparently it has mud walls or something. He runs into a house and he says, whoosh, whoosh, I escaped from the lion or the bear. And he puts his hand on the wall and he lets up his guard and a snake bites him. We can't be mastered by the things we fear. We've got to move toward our fears. We've got to move toward our fears. They're not going to go away. We've got to address our fears. They committed themselves to the sea. You say, well, I don't see the application. This is just too metaphoric for me. I don't see the application. Well, what about this? Jesus in Mark 9, verses 34 and 35. Whosoever will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his what? Take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it. But whosoever shall lose his life for my sake and the gospel's, the same shall save it. They committed themselves to the very thing that was fearful, the sea. I disagreed with Barry Goldwater on so many things. I didn't disagree with Barry Goldwater militarily, but I disagreed with Barry Goldwater, especially as he got older, socially. He was a social liberal, or at best a social moderate. And if you don't think so, you need to study his positions and things he said at the end about some conservative pastors in this country. And we may not agree with a lot of political involvement on the part of pastors, and I'm not going to get detoured by politics, but I'm going to stand on the social issues of the day. So I don't agree with Barry Goldwater and his moderate position on such things as homosexual marriage and all those things. But he did say that courage prevents conflict, but timidity encourages conflict. Remember that with your grandchildren when they come to visit. Courage prevents conflict. Timidity encourages conflict. There is a time we have to act. And they committed themselves to the sea, which in the natural they would have feared. They courageously committed themselves to the whims and the fancies of the sea. It's almost certain that the primary cross Jesus had in mind in Mark 9, verses 34 and 35, was the cross of the stigma or the offense of himself. I acknowledge that. That's context. Jesus wasn't primarily talking in Mark 9, 34 and 35 about my arthritis. That really doesn't rate as the kind of cross Jesus was talking about. He was talking about the stigma of identifying with him. Not just our aches and pains. But there is a secondary sense in whatever is our conflict, whatever is our fear, is in a secondary sense a cross. And we need to embrace it and pick it up and follow if we're going to survive the storm and the slow sailing syndrome. Then, finally, verse 41e, the hinder part of the ship was broken with the violence of the waves. And 44b, some of those who could not swim rescued themselves on broken pieces of the ship. The hinder part of the ship was broken, and some rescued themselves on broken pieces of the ship. The 19th thing we need to know about responding to the slow sailing syndrome and the fear of the storm is this. The slow sailing syndrome will always break the back of something that we've held to be essential. The slow sailing syndrome will always break the back of something we've held to be essential. If you're going to be on the Mediterranean, you assume that you have to have a ship. But God's ways are not our ways. His thoughts are not our thoughts. And as far as the heavens are above the earth, so far are God's ways above our ways and God's thoughts above our ways. We don't have to have everything we think we have to have. And some of us need to go, I speak to myself, we need to go more often to the mission fields of our world. Dr. Hatchett told me that it might be that Jennifer, who was around here when I first started coming here, might be that she would go to Papua New Guinea. I've been there. I was afraid there. One night after Jane and I went to bed, the drums started beating. And the missionary had told us that the tribes still have warfare nowadays, and they use poisoned arrows. And when they're just posturing, they just aim their bows up in the air. They're just posturing. They just aim their bows and shoot their arrows up in the air. But when they mean business, of course, they point the arrow at the enemy. And Jane and I were lying there in the bed and we heard the drums start. And I heard Bill Smith say to Lori, I'm going to go out there and try to calm that thing down. And I heard the screen door slam. And I laid awake and I laid awake and I laid awake and I prayed. And Jane and I prayed. And I drifted off to sleep. I was too much like Peter in the garden. And I woke up the next morning. I thought, oh, Brother Smith, I wonder if he's safe. And then I hear just a few hours ago that Jennifer and her husband may go. But we need to go to the mission fields like that more often to be taught over again that there aren't as many essentials to life. There aren't as many essentials to life as we think there are. And God can keep Bill and Lori Smith safe in Papua New Guinea. There aren't as many essentials in life as we think there are. We don't have to sail quickly. If God says sail slowly, then he's sufficient for slow sailing. If he says you can get to shore without the ship, then we can. And he permits these slow sailing times to break the back of something that we've assumed is essential. And I wonder if we could pray now. Let's pray. Our Heavenly Father, I've still got too many things in my life that I view as essential. I've got too many things that I view as essential to life and ministry. Relationships, tools, friends, human abilities. And Lord, when you break the back of something, some relationship that I have assumed was essential to bring you glory, help me to commit myself to the sea and realize that it's only essential that the name of Jesus be exalted and that his word be preached, whether through giving thanks or one-on-one witness or preaching. It's only essential that the name of Christ be lifted high. So help us, Lord, each one, when we're going through times of slow sailing, to realize that you are the captain of our salvation, made perfect through sufferings. Made perfect through slow times when your own disciples were too sleepy to pray. And if our own captain was made perfect through sufferings, then the servant is not above his master, and help us to learn to endure for your glory in the times of slow sailing. We ask these things for Jesus' sake and glory. Amen.
We trust you have been encouraged or strengthened by the word today. We would love to hear from you. You can email us at graceglory7@juno.com. That's graceglory7@juno.com. We will reply to all those who contact us. And now, until next time, may the good Lord bless and keep you.